Welcome back to TSN 690. I'm John Still with Lucas Scott spinning the beats as always. Andy Bennett somewhere in the vicinity as well. Be taking you right until 3 o'clock. From 3 to 7, it will be myself, Jimmy Garofalos, and Mitch Gallo bringing you Melnick in the afternoon. As I mentioned, I was away on vacation until all of a sudden I got a whole bunch of messages and texts from everyone knowing that as doing voice of CF Montreal and my affinity for Canadian soccer, that everything was going down. And in the end, Canada's men's national team, with several demands coming out and basically deciding to cancel their game in Vancouver. They did end up playing their game against Curaçao 4-0, and they will be playing again tonight. But to go through everything that's happened over the last 2 weeks and what's to come, I'm joined right here on TSN 690 by area manager for North America for Transfer Market, your go-to for everything soccer, both in North America and overseas. It is Manuel Veth. Manuel, how you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good, John. How about you?
I'm very, very well. First of all, I love the fact that you also host the Gegen Pressing Pod as a Liverpool fan. Hey, I'm all about the Gegen Press, so I'm here for it. But Manuel, just take us back to the game in Vancouver. Everyone's expecting it to go off, and just your impressions of what went down between both the CSB, the CSA, the men's national team, and kind of the fallout culminating with Nick Bontis' press conference that, to many fans across the country, did not exactly go well, not in terms of only what he said for the players, but just in terms of the business dealings that Soccer Canada has been doing for the last several years here.
Yeah, it's lack of transparency, really, which that's the main issue here, right? Nick Bontis' press conference then didn't really help to clear up any of the misunderstandings that all of us have with this deal that has been in place between the CSA and the CSB. Look, I think nobody has an issue with that kind of deal. In fact, it's quite common for associations or clubs to sign marketing deals with companies like the CSB. You look at the US soccer with some, right? Or you look at what some club teams have done in Europe. Octagon is an example where clubs have signed deals where they basically wagered their future by getting money now, wagered their future in terms of getting money for potential bonuses, right? And I think that's really what happened here. And at the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with that. You just have to be transparent. And I think this is really where Canada soccer have made the big mistake by not really letting us know, that is the players, that is the media, and that's the fans, on what that deal exactly, how that deal is exactly structured. And the press conference, I mean, I was watching it and I was a little baffled, to be honest, John. I mean, this is an opportunity for you to clear up a lot of the misunderstandings, and I think we're all left with even more question marks.
Yeah, I did it. Look, again, I was actually in an airport in Morocco at around 5 in the morning trying to go through all this and being like, I don't know what the heck's going on. But just, again, it feels like there's an initial $3 million that is paid to Canadian men's soccer when the deal was made. And again, this was under former President Victor Montagliani, who's now over with FIFA, who's ascended further up in that organization. It really does feel, though, like this is kind of a bad business deal in terms of what you expected. I don't know if anyone expected Canada Soccer, the Canadians men's national team, to make it to the World Cup this year. Yeah. But it certainly feels like Victor Montagliani, by making the deal that he did with CSB, was really looking for a quick influx of cash, and what it's done for the future has kind of cut Canada Soccer off at the legs. Am I wrong in feeling that way?
Well, I think what they did, they basically, I think when they made the deal, Canada Soccer's national team, the men's national team, was not in the place they are in today. I think we can all agree on that, right? And so a deal was made. I don't know what exactly the deal was, because it's not being published, right? Mm-hmm. You go through the books, it's not there either. What we do see when you go through the books, and these are public, is that Canada Soccer did have a profit, right? They made a profit of, I have the number somewhere, it was around $18 million. So the money should be there to spend on bonuses, right? But what we don't know is what percentage the CSB is getting. And again, be transparent about it. Let us know, tell us. And I think then that could clear up a lot of the misconceptions. But because that wasn't the case, and we don't know the exact numbers, we're kind of all guessing here. And I'm not going to go out there and say, oh, it's exactly that kind of figure without knowing, right?
Right.
But we should be knowing, because you're in a public entity. And if you're in a public entity, you should be transparent about the numbers that you are receiving and spending. But it's also just, you know, the sort of thing where the public is also paying for part of it, because the government of Canada is sponsoring the CSA. So I think this is the part B of it, where I think where we all deserve some sort of insight of what's exactly happening.
And maybe we'll get that. You hope that was really the perfect moment for Nick Bontis to come out and say, this is what it's for. Instead, you hear things about the Paralympics and futsal, and you're thinking, this is bonuses for the World Cup. I don't understand. That should have already been in the budget. So
exactly. This is, John, sorry to intersect.
No, go ahead.
That's where I had the biggest problem with it all, because he was saying, if they would pay these bonuses, then none of these other programs would have enough money, right? Mm-hmm. Which makes no sense, because if the men's national team doesn't qualify for the World Cup, then those bonuses are there, not there either.
Right.
So this is, I think, where we all kind of looked at each other and said, well, this doesn't add up at all. Because in other words, you're telling me that if the men's national team doesn't qualify for the World Cup, something that you bet on not happening by signing this deal, all these other programs don't have money? I mean, anyone who can do a little bit of math understands that this doesn't work out.
I definitely do just a little bit of math. That's why I'm on the radio, Manuel, and that's why I'm talking to Manuel Veth of Transfer Market here on TSN 690. I'm John Still with Lucas Scott and Andy Bennett as we talk Canadians men's national team and just the fallout from that. I do want to transfer or look to a little bit of what's going on in Europe at the moment, as Canada are going to be taking on Honduras tonight. But I did want to get in what the men's national team in their statement had to say about the women's game, and in terms of wanting to have those bonuses paid out to the women, who again have been the linchpin of this program for several years. We're still waiting. Amy Walsh, I do CF Montreal games with her as the sideline reporter, Canadian Soccer Hall of Famer. She's been very vocal, and rightfully so, in terms of not only compensation, but the lack of a Canadian league here in Canada. How much do you think that the Canadians men's statement, I know the women released their own statement in terms of, well, we're going to negotiate on our own in good faith, but how much do you think, in a positive way, them coming out and making that a part of what they had to say went as far as it could, really, in terms of supporting the women's game?
Yeah, I think the question is, though, when you read the statement in detail, I think the man pointed out that it was the equivalent of earnings, right? So both the man's team would earn the percentage of whatever they earn from the World Cup, and the woman would earn the same percentage in equivalent of whatever they earn in the women's World Cup. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe where some people raise some eyebrows. It's a difficult one, right? I mean, the men's World Cup does earn a lot of money. But then at the same time, the women's program has done so much in terms of progressing the game in this country. And they won the gold medal at the Olympics. Mind you, though, that was under Canada Sports, I believe, and not Canada Soccer. But still, you know, like, there's a lot of stuff that's happened in terms of what the women's game has done in order to progress the game in this country. And I feel that because of that, the men's team has actually hugely benefited. And, of course, the earnings should be split 50-50.
We'll see if that's going to change over the next coming months and weeks. I do want to talk just a little bit about what's going on in Europe, specifically in the Premier League. When you hear that Darwin Nunez goes from Benfica to Liverpool for 80 million plus add-ons, and Erling Haaland, the Borussia Dortmund striker, goes to Manchester City for £60 million, how do you kind of make that, in terms of, is that kind of a real mistake by Borussia Dortmund in terms of that release clause to be able to have it so low? Because in my mind, Erling Haaland and Kylian Mbappe are going to be making us, or going to be taking over the mantelpiece for Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo in the years to come. And I thought that would have been a 150 million transfer windfall. And in the end, Borussia Dortmund only gets 60 million. Is that kind of shocking to you that Haaland moves to City for as little as he did?
Yeah, no, not really, because I remember covering the deal at the time when he went from Salzburg to Dortmund, and getting an exit clause in the contract was a big part of getting the deal across the line. right? They paid about 20 million euros at the time to Salzburg, and they knew that this was only a short-term kind of thing where you get the maximum out of him, and then maybe you sell him on for the 60 million euros that was in the clause. And I'm not too surprised. That's the sort of transfer dealings that Dortmund have done. I think the bigger issue I have with it is that Dortmund don't seem to learn from being this kind of development club, right? At some point, you want to make the step away from being that sort of team and maybe hang on to some of the talent. And maybe that's gonna happen with whoever they're going to sign next as the new number nine. It's going to probably be a striker who's a little bit older, who's going to stay at the club a little bit longer, rather than just focusing on being this carousel for players that just come and go all the time and don't really give you the consistency that you need. Darwin Nunes is an incredible deal, John. I heard you're a Liverpool fan, so you must be really excited.
I'm a little excited, just a little bit.
Yeah, this is the transfer. When I said Haaland is off the market, Darwin Nunes is the player that everyone should be going after. And what I find incredible about this deal is that Liverpool are going to sell Sadio Mane for 40 million euros to Bayern Munich, right? So Bayern Munich are essentially partly financing a transfer for a player that they probably actually should be signing,
right,
rather than signing Mane. Because if you really think about it, Darwin Nunes has everything that Robert Lewandowski that makes him a perfect Robert Lewandowski replacement. And I just a little bit baffled that Bayern are going to go down this route instead. And it's a great deal. Darwin Nunes is going to be a fabulous striker, and he's going to be there for quite some time at Liverpool too, which is something I don't think you can say about Erling Haaland, because he has an extra clause again, right? And we all know that Real Madrid have been trying to get either him or Mbappe. And I think if you look at the fact that Haaland has a 150 million euro exit clause, that just screams to me that Real Madrid are going to come in 2 years and get him.
Yeah, and the one thing that I have, because it feels the Haaland deal specifically, it reminds me a little bit of how everyone was feeling last year when Lukaku went to Chelsea, and that, oh my God, they're, yeah, like, just give these guys the Champions League, give themselves the Premier League. I remember a time when Pep Guardiola got a certain player named Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and everyone thought, yeah, that was just going to work out. And for whatever reason, those two ended up hating each other till the end of time. And what everyone thought was going to work out, I do hope it works out for Erling Haaland, just not when Manchester City take on Liverpool. Finally, last one for you here, Manuel. Another one, very interesting in terms of the other side. Bayern Munich making a big commitment to a young player, 40 million for Ryan Gravenberch out of Ajax. How good of a player is Gravenberch, considering that we've heard several times that this is a guy who could be, I don't know if this is true, a like-for-like Paul Pogba, something in that respect? How good is Ryan Gravenberch?
Yeah, he better be good for the price tag. I mean, it's a little less than that. It's 18.5 million euros plus 4.5. Oh, no, let me redo that. Yeah, it's 6.5. So the deal can grow to 24 million. We know this because Ajax published the fee. Bless them. I always love when clubs do that, be transparent, and that actually let us know what they do.
That's right.
The transfers. means we don't have to guess or speak to various sources at Transfermarkt. We just get it straight from the source, which is the best thing to do. And yeah, I think that's a significant amount of money. It's the second most that Bayern Munich have spent for a player, a U20 player, since Renato Sanchez. And this is the risk, right? We all know that Renato Sanchez at Bayern Munich wasn't a success. And so Bayern Munich are usually quite careful when it comes to that kind of money spent on players of that age, because they rather have the finished product, which is probably why they're going after Sadio Mane rather than Darwin Nunez. Mm-hmm. They very rarely bet on those kind of deals, because unlike most clubs in the world, they have to earn their own money. There's no rich investor that just gives them cash to spend, right? Like, they earn every penny themselves. So I think this is why they often go for the sure bet. So this is a little bit of a risky one, but at the same time, when you look at the ceiling and the things that he's already done for Ajax, and Ten Hag has come out and said that he would have loved to take him with him to Manchester United, presumably to replace Paul Pogba, right? There's a lot of people that are rooting for this guy and see a bright future for him. So I think that Ryan Gravenberch, if he fulfills his potential, could be one of the most dominant midfielders in Europe.
Well, we'll talk about when the Frankie de Jong transfer to Manchester United for 100 million euros to team up with Donny van de Beek under Erik ten Hag like he did in Ajax all these years ago. I will get you on the line, Manuel Veth. Manuel Veth from Transfer Market, thank you so much for joining us, and have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, you too, and thank you for having me.
That's you can follow him on Twitter at Manuel Veth. He's the area manager for North America for Transfer Market, the be all and end all of all your football news. We'll be back in just a moment here on TSN 690 with myself, John Still, Lucas Scott, and Andy Bennett to give tribute to the ultimate library cop. Always pushing that we formed an